Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so happy that you're here, and I can't wait to introduce you to today's guest. Now, this is a person who I was actually introduced to through my younger brother, and it was one of those times where you hop on a Zoom call with a stranger, and then all of a sudden you're having like this really deep and interesting and funny and entertaining conversation with a like-minded person. And so Justin and I, today's guest, we knew that we needed to keep talking and find some ways to collaborate in the future. And so we've got to do a couple of diversity, equity, and inclusion projects together. And I was so excited when he said yes to be on the Inclusion First Podcast. So let me share Justin's bio with you. Justin Castelli is the founder of RLS Wealth, a registered investment advisor in Fishers, Indiana, the chief of staff at OnRamp Invest, and the co-founder of the AGC, which is an online community for financial advisors. Now, even with all of these different roles that he plays, Justin has worked hard to center his family, and he spends most of his free time with his wife and his three boys. He has a personal mission statement that he has condensed down to one word: impact, with his goal to be to make an impact in everything he does and with everyone he comes across. This includes making an impact on making the world of finance a more representative and equitable profession. Please join me in welcoming to the Inclusion First Podcast, Justin Castelli. Hi, Justin. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. I am so excited to have this conversation with you today. Thank you so much for being here.
Carrie, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this since you asked me to be on.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about like who you are, and then we're just going to like jump right into the questions.
Right. So as you probably heard in the intro, my name is Justin Castelli, but I am a father and a husband first, but I'm also a financial advisor, amongst many other things. I've become very entrepreneurial over the last few years, but I live in Fishers, Indiana. So fun fact is Carrie and I went to the same high school. I graduated with her brother.
Crazy.
So I've known the Sawyers for a long time. And there is actually a story, I don't know if it'll come up later, about racism and everything that involves Carrie's brother from when we were in high school. So I don't know if we'll get there, but maybe that'll be something that I could bring up and share in another way. But I don't feel like I'm anybody super exciting. Just, you know, dad to three boys, Roman, Leo, and Silas. My wife, Angela, she is a business owner as well. So we're a household of entrepreneurial people, and that's really about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for giving us a little preview, a little insight into the amazing Justin. My first question, really, it's pretty high level, but I would love to hear like your take on it. So what does it mean to you to be an activist today in 2021? And do you consider yourself to be one?
Yeah, so I told you I wasn't going to prep, but I did do a little bit of prep. And I'm glad I did, because when I first think of the word activist, I go to the traditional sense of marching and protests and, you know, picketing and all those types of things. And that's what I think of when I think of activists. But as I was reading about it some more and then thought about it, I think that that is still activist by definition, but I think there's ways to be an activist in 2021 that is different than the past. So from a monetary standpoint, you can be supporting causes with your dollars that's, you know, anti-racist. So I initially think of the things that I'm not doing. I'm not somebody who is overly intentional, and I mean that from the stance, I'm not going to protests, I'm not boycotting, or I'm not necessarily fully being conscious of everything that I support by like dollars, like what I buy. Like Nike would be somebody that, depending on what your beliefs are, you may not want to support Nike because of, you know, China and all those other things. I don't go that way, but I am intentional in other ways, kind of in my behavior and leadership ways. So I don't think of myself as an activist in the traditional sense, but I do think I am an activist from the way I'm intentional about certain areas of my life. And being, you told me to be honest and transparent in this podcast, so leading right off with that, that last comment of I'm not as intentional as I could be makes me a little embarrassed that I don't do more than what I am doing. Maybe I should be more intentional with the things that I do and make more time for these things that I do care about. But then when you get into life and you have three boys and all the other things, running two businesses and doing all these things, like there's a priority list. And sometimes as I reflect on this today and as I'm leading up to it, maybe I need to prioritize some other things to use my platform that I've developed over the last 5 or 6 years to do more and be more. So very, very long-winded. I don't consider myself an activist in the traditional sense. I do consider myself as somebody who is intentional with some areas of their life, but I could be better.
Okay. So I got to ask, like, what are those areas that you are intentional about in your life when it comes to your definition of activism?
So I feel like I'm very intentional in just trying to be a good person and including everybody. And I want to include everybody from a genuine stance. I don't want to do it just to check boxes. So growing up, I played basketball, and where I grew up, I was the only white kid who was ever around. So I grew up at, you know, in my neighborhood and on the basketball court of where I grew up, I was the minority. I was the one who was not in the majority. So I grew up around other black people. I was very comfortable where a lot of white people were uncomfortable. And I've noticed that over time, I have been very intentional and going out of my way of, especially in finance, being in the world of finance, it's very heavy white male. That if I see a black financial advisor, I almost always go out of my way to make sure that I go talk to them so they don't feel like they're being neglected. And I kind of go above and beyond to try to include them. So it's just something that's always been natural to me, is when I see somebody who I think is being left out, I try to make sure that they come in, no matter who they are. But in the sense of what we're talking about today, I'm very intentional about that. I'm also very intentional about trying to make my three boys realize the privilege that they have and the things that some of their friends are going to have to overcome that they won't realize that they didn't have to overcome. And that's just something that I've really been more aware of over the last few years. And looking back, I can identify more of it. But in the moment growing up, I was pretty naive to how good I had it. So I think it's more that I'm intentional with my actions of trying to make sure that people aren't left out, that I try to bring them in. And then also where I have the most control out of anything in this world is my family, making sure that my boys, one, know how to treat people, but then also realize, you know, there are friends that they're going to have to stick up for and or understand that their friends have had to overcome things that they haven't. And that's okay. It's not their fault, but that's the way it is. And try to hopefully instill in them the values that I have and the way that I've set out to be, because I think I've done a good job. As I mentioned, I could do better, but I think I've done a good job to point that they can do what I've done. I think that together we're moving things forward.
Absolutely. So it's interesting that you brought up the work that you're doing with your three sons. How old are your sons?
They are soon to be 11, 8, and 3.
Okay, awesome.
So really it's the 11 and 8-year-old that are getting
the 3-year-old, you're like, not quite yet, but eventually, right. Not probably sooner than desired. But I've had a few conversations with a couple of parents recently. One parent who is mixed race and one parent who is a good friend of mine as well, who is white, and just like the struggle of like, how do you talk to your children about race? How do you help them to understand? How do you help them to understand like how to navigate these, you know, these experiences when you're not there, and even understanding them in reflection? I would love to hear if you have any examples that you're comfortable sharing. Like, what's an example of something that you've had to talk to your children about, or something that they maybe brought to you that you were like, whoa, that was unexpected, you know? Like, what does that look like for you?
I would say 2020 gave me and my wife as parents the perfect opportunity to start having these conversations. And if I'm being honest with you, I don't know if it wasn't for everything that went on last year if I would have had those conversations to this point. We've made sure to expose the boys to different cultures and kind of put them around in certain places. And exposure is one way of doing it.
Sure.
But because of everything that happened after George Floyd and everything that came out of that, that gave an easy conversation to explain, well, here's why everybody's upset. Here's why these things are going on. And then kind of point out, hey, there's things that your friends that you know today are going to have to worry about that you'll never have to worry about because of the color of your skin and the color of theirs. And then just being transparent about that and talking to them about it and letting them ask questions. And it's kind of cool though, even at, you know, in today's world, I feel like kids lose their innocence earlier than we did growing up. Mm-hmm. But even at the time, 10 and 8, there's still a lot of innocence in both of them, is not understanding why and having that, just that very genuine, naive question of, well, why would somebody think that? I don't get that. That doesn't make sense. Well, you're exactly right. It doesn't make sense that people would judge somebody by the color of their skin, but that's something that's been around for so long, and that's not the right thing to do. And we need to make sure that we stand up for somebody. Say, we see that happening. You step up and say, that's not the right thing to do. And so I think 2020 made it easier for me to start having those conversations. And once they've been had, it's a lot easier to continue them and then point out things to remind them. And again, be intentional with things that we do and things that we watch and things that we listen to as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So in your circle of friends or people that you know who are also parents, do you all talk about, like, do you ever talk about, like, the things that you have need to talk to your children about or any of these experiences? I'm just totally, like, riffing right now because I'm, like, seeing you, like, with other people who are like-minded or maybe not. And like, oh, does it come up? Like, you know, you're barbecuing, you're, like, visiting, there's play dates. Like, do these kinds of things come up with other groups of parents? And how do you talk about that? You know, even just supporting your, you know, your community of friends.
Amongst our white friends, no, it doesn't come up that much. I think a lot of white people are afraid to talk about it, even amongst other white people. I think there's the fear of, well, maybe this person doesn't share the same views as me. And then also not knowing of the right way to go about talking about it. And I don't know if there is a right way. Like, sometimes you just have to say it and maybe say something in the wrong way to get things, the conversation, the dialogue going.
Sure.
So amongst white friends, not very much at all. But around my, you know, friends that are black, there, I've had more conversations with them. And interestingly enough, those conversations have been started by them as following up from some of the content that I created. So I did mention earlier, like, as a role of a financial advisor, I do a lot of content. So I have a podcast, I have a blog. And last summer was honestly the first time I felt comfortable to step out and not just do the action part of being anti-racist and being an ally, but then actually being vocal about it. Hmm. So I wrote a handful of blog posts. I had some podcasts about it. I went on some other podcasts to talk about it. And instead of being quiet, I actually put my voice out there. And it wasn't hard. And after I did the first blog post, it wasn't really scary. But once I put those out there, then my friends that were black, they reached out to me and one, thanked me for putting that out there. But then conversations came about of, here's other things you can be doing, or here's why that meant so much to have that come out from a white man. Like, it was actually kind of cool that was an unintended consequence. I felt one thing that I could do was just further the conversation, put things out there and just circulate messaging. And then maybe more dialogues come from there. But then there's these other ancillary benefits of it that I never knew would come and were never a part of my game plan that came from it as well, that my friends let me know. So if you can't tell by now, I tend to ramble a little bit. with my white friends, we don't talk about it very much. But with my, you know, black friends, it does come up in conversation. And it's more them empowering me more to be able to do more on my own.
That's amazing. And yeah, there's no rambling here. Like, that's the conversation. The magic happens in the ramble. So fear not. Can you give some examples of, like, some of the topics that you were kind of broaching back in 2020 when you were first putting your voice out there in the topic of anti-racism?
Yeah. So some of it centered around finance. And actually, the very first time I spoke about it and like in the form of a video was with my friend Tyrone, who I was telling you about, is the CEO of the company that I joined.
Yeah.
We were at a conference, and this is one of the biggest aha moments for me. So I'll get to some of the other examples, but one of the biggest aha moments I had for me was we were at a conference, so finance conference, all white, old white men, and they're going through some presentation. And I noticed in this presentation, the stereotypical family having somebody graduate, the wedding, the retirement. I noticed right away that it was all white people in those images. Like that stuck out to me right away. Like I was aware enough and I've seen that stuff enough to know that like we do that. What I missed on that Tyrone opened my eyes, which led to a video, was that they started talking about how by lowering investment fees, the money saved could be used to go cure malaria and all these diseases. And they showed a couple of young black kids in Africa. And to me, that didn't register as a red flag, because I think when you think of those illnesses, that's where you would find it. But what Tyrone explained to me, which was really one of the things that opened my eyes to be more receptive of the things that I haven't been aware of before, was that when you constantly see images of the sick and poor reflecting you, you know, the black children reflecting Tyrone, you start to believe that's what you're destined to be. So his beef wasn't on the white kid or the white families graduating and retiring. It was that why does the negative, the poor, the sick always have to be the black image? And that was something that I didn't even think of, because again, the other ones I saw were obvious, the flaws there, but because I didn't see myself in those young, sick black kids all my life growing up, it didn't register in my mind that that's like conditioning you to think that way. So when he said that to me, that was a big eye opener. So we just do what I used to do, put a camera down. We stood with the beach in the background and we had like a 15-minute conversation about this, the images and what that means and how it goes. So like that was the very first time I put it out there. And then, when Ahmaud Arbery was murdered, like I wrote a piece about that. And like, I literally bawled the morning I watched that. And then I read it, because I could just, even though that wasn't my boys, I could see my boys in like the fear that they would be in that position. So that was the first thing I wrote about last year. And then it was just other follow-up pieces and just trying to further the conversation. And because I put those pieces out there, then I was asked to join some other podcasts being similar to this. It, you know, it was a panel of, you know, other white people in finance talking about what is it that we do and what are the problems and how can we help, and just having an open dialogue. So just a variety of things. But then much like the rest of the world over this last year, you know, 2021, I haven't written much about it. And again, reflecting back, preparing for this, I'm like, shame on me. How did I not continue the conversation? How did I not find time to do that? And I've been a little bit more intentional, you know, with everything around Juneteenth the last week, there's been some more articles and things like that. So I made sure that as I found some real good articles, I at least shared it. I didn't have anything necessarily that I was called to write about this year, but I at least was sharing, trying to do my part of, okay, my part this year isn't to write, because the way I create content and share my message is when I feel motivated to and something sparks in me. So for whatever reason, this year I didn't have that, but it doesn't mean I can't help. If I can amplify somebody else's message to help somebody else, then I can at least do that.
Yeah. These are all really great examples, because regardless of what field you're in, like if you're working, like these are thoughts that you can have, right? Like thinking about like the imagery that you're putting in convert or in presentations, like thinking about how to amplify voices, thinking about when you have something to say, like go and say it. And whether you're saying it to a person, to your partner, to, you know, your team on social media, just using that spark to continue the dialogue and to continue the conversation, because it's really these just like simple moments where you can like just let it pass, or you can, you know, you can interrupt it and add something that might shift the way that you're thinking about things or shift the way that someone else is thinking about things.
Yeah. And I guess another effort, I didn't mention this in the beginning. I mentioned having multiple businesses, but I co-founded a community for financial advisors back in 2019. And it's myself and another advisor who happens to be a few years younger than me and a white male. So naturally, in a world of finance, which is very heavily white male, two white guys who start a community attracted a lot of other white men. And last year, we have some women in the community and some advisors of color. And we weren't like, when we started the community, we tried to be intentional, and we didn't know what was the best way to say, hey, this community is for everybody. So we just thought we're going to try to put together open community, make it welcoming, make it a safe place, and that word of mouth will help us grow. And I think there's other things we could have done better in hindsight, but we didn't succeed. So beginning of this year, we started, I hate the term, and we're trying to find a better term, a diversity and inclusion committee. I hate it because everybody says it, and what does that really mean? And, and does diversity and inclusion actually work? But the goal for this community is we meet regularly and come up with ways to have better representation inside the community. And not just race, you know, women, everything, trying to improve it to make our community look more like the future of the financial planning world, which is going to be a more diverse profession. And it's actually been pretty cool. And it's also had some interesting conversations, like going back to diversity and inclusion and what does that mean? And is that the right title? We were trying to figure out, well, how do we make ourselves more welcome to advisors of color was the terminology that we came up with. Mm-hmm. And one of our members, who I think on the surface would be identified as an advisor of color, said that she didn't identify with an advisor of color. So it's almost like we were trying to go down this path of trying to better the community, make it more representative, bring more people in. And we don't even know how to actually say that. Like, what's the right word? Is it advisors of color? Or do we say, you know, Black, Asian, Latin? Like, what's the right way to put this message across? Because if you say it one way, the fear is it rubs somebody wrong. But if you say it another way, then somebody you would want to come in may not identify with that. So it's been a learning experience. I will say that we've had success in the short amount of time that we've been working on it. And actually this month we have two of our members that are advisors of color leading a open session that we have where people can come ask questions. And myself and my co-founder won't be there. So it will be two of our advisors speaking to the communities that we want to attract. No holds barred. Anybody can ask questions. The leaders aren't there. The white guys aren't there. So that hopefully our two members can be fully transparent and honest, and that those attending who want to get the truth will feel like they're getting the truth without anybody being forced to answer a certain way. So of everything that I've been doing in the last year, I think that has the biggest chance to have a big impact, because we can really impact the profession and bringing people in. We're doing some things with colleges, which is pretty cool. So I guess that's something that I've been working on. It's been intentional as well, that I didn't think about earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I love, and I try to point this out with all my guests, is that, you know, you looked around your space, you know, you've got these different triggers, these different sparks for maybe like the timing and why and how, but you look around your space and you see, what can we do? Like, what could be better? Who is missing? How do we like create spaces that feel safe and inclusive? And then, you know, this is exactly in your own sphere of influence, right? And so we all, like, you don't have to go and like pick up a new hobby to like start to think about how to incorporate inclusion and diversity and equity into your life, how to start to think and act and speak like an anti-racist. You can look exactly where you are and start to find opportunities to do this work. And I think that, you know, the examples that you're giving, specifically in your finance sphere, are really great ways to do exactly that.
I'd be curious to get your feedback on this. So one of the things that has been very tough with the community initiative is that I want to be very careful about the messaging and the why behind we're doing this, because we genuinely want our community to be diverse. Like, it's not that we want to say that we're checking boxes or we're doing this because we're supposed to. Like, that's what we really want, my co-founder and I both, and the community itself. But going about trying to send that message out there has been very tough, because I want it to come across as genuine. And I don't want it to come across as patronizing those communities that we're trying to go after. And it's not that I'm afraid of offending the white advisors that would be, you know, offended by this, because there's people who have those closed minds. I don't care if I offend them, because honestly, I don't want them in the community. What I don't want to do is I don't want to unintentionally offend the people that we're trying to reach by making them feel like we're just trying to tick a box, or we're just saying that we're doing this and not being genuine behind it. Like, that's been the hardest thing, is what's the best way to communicate this, that this is something that we're serious about and we're trying to put action behind it, but we also need some help to get some traction, because there's only so much that we can do. So that's been the hardest part of it, is not going about it in a way that won't offend our intended audience.
Yeah. And I think it's a tricky thing, because number one, no one wants to be a token. And you know, before now, there were millions of opportunities for not just your group, not picking on your group, but any group who was going through the same thing. Cause I think there are a lot of groups are like tons of opportunities before this moment, before last year, to like decide that you were going to put a priority on diversity. Right. So you just kind of have to take the knocks for those, just because that just is what it is. Now, one of the things that I like to tell people when they have this question is that you need to be super clear on your why. Like, why is it that you are recruiting diverse members? Like, get your 3 to 5 bullets, make them authentic, make them transparent, make them real, right? Because then when you reach out, you can say, hey, you know what? This is what we're trying to do. And this is why. And this is why we think it's important. And this is why we know that having a more diverse community will benefit such and such, you know, initiative, cause, field, et cetera, et cetera. And some people will be like, you know what, I'm actually really interested in that. And I want to go do that. And people are like, yeah, whatever, you're probably just riding the wave. Like, I mean, all the, we saw with Black Lives Matter after George Floyd, like everyone was emailing you Black Lives Matter. I'm like, I'm pretty sure MMFLIR, you don't actually care about Black Lives very much, like you didn't yesterday. So, but at the same time, some people will have that reaction, but other people will be like, well, I'm interested in this group. I'm interested in this topic. And yeah, let me go and like check it out and see if they're real or not, right? Because someone can feel right away, like we're all very good at this, if something is authentic or not, if you're just paying lip service or not, right? And so when they get there, like, how are you demonstrating that this actually is inclusive? And not just to like those groups, right? Like the Asian people don't want to see like Asians welcome sign. Like, no, they want to like, they want to see like in like organic ways, like how is this welcoming to people who look like me? Like, are you having presenters who identify as AAPI? Are you putting out blogs that, you know, are from us or for us, right? So you've got this like, who's the talking head? That's not the metaphor I want to use, but who's the person presenting the content and how do you make that diverse? And then who are the people that are here consuming the content and how do you make that diverse? And then how are the topics sometimes, like some topics are for everyone. Some topics might be for me as a, you know, as a BIPOC person, right? So how are you making sure that you're demonstrating your authenticity and your commitment to diversity so that once you've said, hey, here's my why, come check us out, they get there like, oh yeah, these people are legit. They actually do care about diversity versus like, yeah, no, they just really are looking for some tokens so they can point and say that they have brown people in their group, right? And so some of that is trial and error and figuring out like what that right balance is. But you know, it's that journey and just and going on it and adjusting as you see what works and what doesn't, right? Because you're not going to always say the right thing. What do you do after that? You figure out how to say the right thing. You apologize if you caused harm and you keep going. Or you're like, oh, we tried, didn't work. Sorry. Right. So
that makes me feel good because I feel like once we get more of the communities in that we want, they're going to see all that. Like the things you mentioned about who are the guest speakers. We've been intentional about making sure our guest speakers don't look alike all the time because there's plenty of great speakers of all different types. Mm-hmm. So it's not hard to bring in a good speaker that isn't a white guy or a white woman. So like I know once people get in from the human beings that are in there and the genuine great people that are there that are going to make mm-hmm. them feel welcoming, in addition to going through and watching all of our guest speakers, you being one of them, they're going to see people who look like them and realize that we're genuine and we're real. It's just getting them in the door that's been the hard thing. So hopefully I could come back in a year's time and say, all right, Carrie, here's an update of here's some of the things that our committee did. Here's the successes. Here's the things we learned. Here's the things we did wrong. And here's what we changed from that. So it might be like a 10-minute follow-up podcast.
Yes. Before, after. I'm down. Let's definitely do that because I know that you'll have some other stories and other things that have sparked in your mind to continue to, you know, to push inclusion and equity by then as well. So absolutely. So Justin, this has been really good. I have a couple more questions for you. Mm-hmm. So for the person who, let's say they're kind of like playing the sidelines, right? They're watching all these things happen. They're feeling really uncomfortable and like, you know, maybe there's a difference that I can make, but I'm just not sure what that is. And so I'm just going to kind of ride this sideline. Like, what advice do you give to that person to help like activate them so that they take a look around at where they can have some influence and drive some change and actually decide, you know what, I'm going to act, even if it's small, I'm going to act.
That'd be the advice is take action. You know, don't let paralysis by analysis keep you on the sidelines of trying to figure out how you can make change. Because being that I wrote and spoke last year kind of on these issues, I had a lot of other advisors that I'm friends with that wanted to do something, but they didn't know how to say it. They were afraid to say something. They didn't want to say it the wrong way and have it backfire on them. And simply what I told them is, okay, then that's not your place to do it right now. There's another way for you to help and contribute that may not be writing a blog post or doing a podcast. Maybe it is sharing other content that's real good to further somebody else's message. amplifying somebody else's voice helps the cause. Maybe it is, as a business owner, you're looking to hire. Maybe you hire somebody that fits the, you know, different demographic than what you already have in, being intentional with your hiring as well. There's lots of different ways. I mentioned money earlier, you know, donating to causes, funneling money to the places that are, you know, aligning with the values that you have that maybe you're not in a position or comfortable speaking up. But I think you just have to get over the fear of, I mean, I'm talking on both sides of the mouth, the fear of upsetting somebody, because that was one of my fears with the community, mm-hmm. and realize that you're not going to make everybody happy. But if you are, if you're really serious about helping change, you've got to at some point say something. And whether that is something major, or if it's just speaking up when you see somebody acting inappropriately or saying something inappropriate, just saying something. And I can promise you, once you do it once and you realize that it's not as scary as it was, and the impact that you have is actually a positive one, I think it gets easier to do a little bit more and kind of compound on top of it. So I think the first piece would be find the area that you're most comfortable, that is the least scary for you to do something, and do something in that lane. And then I think once you do something once, you'll be able to step outside your comfort zone and do a little bit more. And then maybe you're able to make, quote unquote, a bigger impact. But I think that some of the more quiet ones still have major impact. There's other ways that they're just not aware of. So I think that's where I would start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to do the same thing that you did. I'm like talking out of both sides of my mouth for sure. But like making mistakes, like, it's okay. And it's also expected, because so many people are raising their hand for the first time, reaching out for the first time, like in this space of anti-racism, in this space of social justice. You're doing something new and you're not going to do it perfect and you're not going to do it right. So all the time, right? So when you do make that mistake, like, how do you stand up in integrity, right? Like, how do you learn from that mistake? And so much learning can happen from the mistakes. Like, a story that I have been wanting to tell around like the idea of making like epic mistakes. And so this is this was several years ago, but if you Google it, it still comes up like in the first like couple results. But this was at a conference called Grace Hopper, which is like the largest tech conference for women in the country, maybe in the world now. And the CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, was on the stage being interviewed by like an all-girls school president. And he was talking about basically like meritocracy and how if you put your head down and like work hard, you're going to get noticed and you're going to get the promotion, to a conference full of tech women who know that that is not the truth. And he got roasted on this. I mean, the lady who was interviewing him like helped to like kind of like get use it as a teaching moment, but like immediately social media, like everything blew up. Like, I cannot believe that this CEO of Microsoft said this. We know that this is not true for all these reasons. Now, he could have said all kinds of different things, but what did he do? He apologized. He acknowledged his mistake and that he didn't realize basically what he was saying that was completely wrong. And that, you know, this other experience is happening for a lot of people. And then he put into action a series of things at Microsoft that helped to take a look at the pay gap between men and women and programs to help women promote and all of these different things. And had he not made that epic mistake on an epic stage, none of those programs would have come into being, and maybe later, but like they came into being because of that mistake that he made, right? And his ability to what I would call standing up in integrity after he made that mistake, right? And so we're not all CEOs of Microsoft, no. But when we make these mistakes, they still feel really huge. But how do we use that mistake to learn and to, number one, not do it again, but even launch us into a totally different area of knowledge and opportunity that wouldn't have been available had we not seen and become aware of this huge blind spot, you know, that we had. So I love that story. Like, I'm just like, look, do that, because screw up and then fix it in such a way that it's better than before you made the mistake, right?
Yeah. And I think that owning it and apologizing is always the right answer. I think my fear is I'm not the CEO of Microsoft. So do I have the opportunity to enact something to make up for my mistake in that learning issue? Or if I say something out of turn, genuinely as a mistake, even if I apologize and own it, like with social media, that stuff can run and you could like, do I have a chance to recover? Because I'm not in a position where mm-hmm. I can really change things on a huge level. I do think that it would still, in my situation, there'd be an opportunity to do some things of enact change, but does it get picked up and is it as impactful to offset the slip up that I had? So I do think that is something that keeps people on the sidelines, is that fear of saying something wrong by accident. Like, there's the obvious stuff that deserves to get roasted and taken care of, but just saying something, or maybe even miscommunicating what you really mean, can really backfire on you. And I do think that is something that's scary. And it just, I think that also in some ways it makes you think twice about your beliefs and what you're saying. Like, do I really want to say it this way? Is this really what I mean? And then how can it be read differently? So I'll give you an example. It's not about race, but in that video with Tyrone about the imagery, we also got into about women in finance. And Tyrone started talking about females. And I did not realize at the time that female to some women can be offensive. Didn't realize this. Interestingly enough, like 3 days after this event that happens, I'm about to tell you about, a female advisor network for financial advisors was launched. the reason I kind of chuckle at that is there was an advisor who took offense to Tyrone and me using the term female. And it turned this video that was meant to be good into a negative thing, all this negative stuff on social media about it, which, and what really bothered me was this advisor like ended up blocking me, never accepted anything. Cause I wrote this, it really bothered me because that was not the intent of the video. Yeah, sure. And I didn't know that was offensive. So to me, this is a teaching moment. Like, let's you and I hop on a video and talk about why this is offensive and why men should think about this and why you shouldn't use this terminology and how some women interpret it. But the conversation was never able to be had because through all the forums I had to get in touch with her, I was blocked on Twitter right away, didn't accept LinkedIn. Like, I had no way. No, she didn't. But the thing is, like, it really was a genuine positive video with something that was a learning experience that we never got to actually turn into a learning experience for more people. But I will tell you, to this day, I never utter the word female. Like, I know that could offend somebody. So I personally learned, and thankfully it didn't cause any like long-term trouble to reputations of Tyrone or myself, but it is kind of like, oh, I didn't even know that. And it's offensive. And now I've made this whole, you know, audience mad at me because I used this word that I didn't even know was offensive in some way. So I do think that is something that's scary. And I would say, regardless of the audience, I also think that just in general, we as people should offer some other people space and grace, meaning, okay, maybe he really gives people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he really didn't mean to offend it. He didn't know. Let me give him some space and some grace to learn. But if he does it again, then we know that really is who he is and like he didn't take it. So mm-hmm. I just think that sometimes people mean well, they misspeak, they don't communicate the way they really wish they would have. And there's no chance to accept an apology as being genuine other than, okay, you messed up. You have to say an apology publicly and you don't mean it. Because I'm guilty of that, of thinking when somebody slips up and they apologize on social media, a lot of times, like, you don't really mean that, you're just saying that. And I need to give that person the benefit of that. Like, maybe they really did mess up and they did learn from it. So I think that's something that all sides could also benefit from.
Yeah, absolutely. Giving each other space and grace on the side of the person who made the mistake. And even the person who the mistake was made, the person who walks away being offended, because sometimes when these things happen, you're like, I don't actually like, you know, I don't want to talk to that person. And it's totally, you know, it's totally okay. It's up to them. And then you get to like navigate, you know, that space on your own without that person, which is fine because you can still definitely learn and everything from it. But, I think that, you know, I'm going to say a couple of things. Like, something will offend like someone, right? In some cases. And like, I didn't, like, if you call me a female, I didn't know, I do not know why I should be offended by that. And apparently there's a whole group of people who do and are. Right. So you've got these different, like, our identities are so faceted and so specific and so tightly held that everyone's is unique. And the same person who's like, don't call me female, there's a person who's like, I don't care. And then there's a person like, please do call me female. Right. So some of these spaces are so fluid that you really are taking it case by case. And you just have to kind of figure out what's happening at the time, which it sounds like that's basically what you all did. I also totally, but like, I do not believe in being canceled. Like, I just don't. Like, as long as I'm alive and here, you cannot cancel me. I don't care like what I did. Like, I can't be canceled because I'm still here, like trying to create the world that I want to see, trying to make things better. Right. And so part of your journey might be a mistake that pushes you in a direction that you didn't like intend to go, But I mean, that's the same as like an illness or a death or like all these different things, right? So knowing that as long as your heart and intention is in the right place, you will continue to move forward on your path, regardless of what other people are thinking or saying about you. And for people, I'll just speak for me, for people like me, if I said something really like horrendous, like my audience, it's not like, it's small, right? So, but in the grand scheme of like, you know, Satya Nadella versus like a Carrie Sawyer, like it's just, you know, that's, it feels huge to me, but at the end of the day, like there are other audiences, there's other places, there are things that I can do. And like the fear that might hold me back is, it's like a barrier in my head that I honestly feel that we can push past it. Because if you're trying to make the world better, avenues will open up to you regardless, right? It might not be the one you thought because you screwed up that one, but over here, a window will open. And that's just my own like faith and spirituality. I'm like, I cannot be canceled. You cannot cancel me, or you cannot cancel anyone. but that's not the culture that we're living in. But I feel like if you believe you can be canceled, you can't be canceled. But if you don't, you can't.
True.
Justin, thank you so much. Thank you for letting me ramble also.
Of course, definitely.
I appreciate this like just super winding and amazing conversation. We touched on a lot of different things. So if people want to follow you, follow your work, learn more about these communities that you're creating in finance, where can they get in touch with you?
So social media wise, the place I hang out the most is on Twitter. So it's at Justin Castelli. That's JUS10CASTELLI. And then my website, justincastelli.io, it has links to everything. Everything that I do is from that one page. It's basically like a fancy link tree. So that's awesome. Those two best places.
Awesome.
And I want to thank you before we go, I want to thank you for allowing me to come on, because I view this as an opportunity for me to continue the conversation. So you and I had this conversation. Hopefully some people are going to listen. And in there's something that somebody learned or sparked a conversation that they have with somebody else. So again, I mentioned this year, I didn't do as much content wise as I did the previous year. So I want to thank you for the opportunity for me to continue to do my part in a small way on this whole matter.
It is my pleasure. And, you know, we'll just keep amplifying each other's voices out here.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Carrie.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.